From Lock Haven to Greensburg, Altoona to Lebanon, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, school board races are often overlooked, but this year they are ground zero in fights over issues from mask mandates to critical race theory. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Matt and LJ Briette for a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. And the November general election is just days away. The statewide ballot features contests for four seats on the appellate courts. I'll have a town hall commentary on why those races are vitally important. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The process of redrawing Pennsylvania's State House and State Senate district lines took a step forward this past week when the Legislative Reapportionment Commission officially certified population data received from the U.S. Census Bureau. The five-member commission is composed of the Republican and Democratic leaders in the House and Senate, along with Mark Nordenberg, who is Chancellor Emeritus of the University of Pittsburgh. He serves as chairman. The commission has until January 12th to draft new maps. The redistricting process takes place every 10 years to account for population shifts within the state. In the race for the Republican nomination for the United States Senate in next year's May primary, an internal poll released by candidate Sean Parnell shows him leading his three opponents, but 57% of the voters remain undecided. Parnell clocked in with 27%. His nearest rival, Jeff Bartos, polled 7%. Parnell narrowly lost a congressional race last year to Connor Lamb, who is now also running for the Senate seat. Bartos was the GOP nominee for lieutenant governor in 2018. In a win for defenders of Second Amendment gun rights, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has ruled that anyone can challenge city or municipal laws restricting those rights, even if they don't live there or have not been charged with a crime. The ruling comes in the wake of a challenge to restrictions on firearms put into place in the city of Harrisburg, which have been challenged by Firearms Owners Against Crime and other pro-Second Amendment groups. The ruling clears the way for such challenges to now proceed in the lower courts. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Among the offices voters will find on the ballot Tuesday are seats on local school boards. Normally low-key affairs, school board races in many districts have become hotly contested and are flashpoints for debate on everything from mask mandates to critical race theory. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion with the father-daughter team of Matt and LJ Briette. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my main man, Matt Briette, CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, good to be with you again, David.
Well, it's the most wonderful time of the year. I love the autumn, especially like the late autumn. You've got the World Series going on. You've got the leaves changing, the crispness in the air. I love all that. And of course, one of the other things, it's election time. So this coming Tuesday, Pennsylvanians will go to the polls to exercise their citizenship, hopefully by casting informed ballots.
Indeed. I think some of the most important elections happen. They call them off year. I think that's incorrect because there's nothing off about the third branch of government, our judicial elections.
Yes, sir.
And with four statewide judicial seats open, these are important courts. I mean, because you can have a governor, you can have a legislature that all does acts, you know, the will of the population, only to be overturned by the courts. And so these matter, and it is very unfortunate that we treat them sort of as a, you know, second tier or third tier.
A less than.
And of course, this year we're also looking at school board elections. So, I know we'll talk a bit about that, but these are all very, very important.
Municipal elections.
Absolutely. I mean, those have really the impact on your daily life. If you said, you know, what level of government has an impact on my daily life? It's those local things, right? School boards, your property taxes, municipal, it's your roads, your fire, your police, your water, your trash. I mean, all of that.
Yes. And I think it's also reflective of the looking at those local elections as being somehow less important. I think it's a reflection of, you know, of a bad trend, which is the the federalization of everything, the gigantism of government, the concentration of power further away from the people. And again, Matt, you're right. That's the way that it ought to be, is for, you know, the insofar as we have federalism and things are structured and different levels of government have different responsibilities, that we should focus on our local government and the duties that it's supposed to have.
Well, and there are real challenges in this, of course, is because information is important on these things. We've seen our newspapers die out. You don't get the coverage of what's going on in your local school district or municipal meetings. So you don't get that kind of information that I think would help people be more engaged and pay closer attention.
Right.
But I think that there are some things happening really even at the national level that are causing people to really pay attention at the local level because of whether it's mandates coming from the federal government, the state government, that are impacting things at the local level that I think has created a groundswell, a good groundswell of people paying closer attention to these elections.
Right, absolutely. And so with the, you know, with pandemic fallout and kids not being in school and now parents learning about, you know, insane things like, you know, teaching kids racism or race guilt or racial thinking.
And not wanting them to have any input on that.
Parents to have any input,
That's right. Or any transparency to see it. I mean, we can talk about some of these bills that have come up that it's been amazing to me that you don't have unanimous support for things. What I think Representative Andrew Lewis had a bill on transparency for the curriculum.
Correct.
Just letting parents know what's going on in your school. You had pretty much all the Democrats, I think is a straight party line vote, that said, no, we don't want parents to be able to know what's in the curriculum, what's being taught in your schools. I mean, this is just flies in the face of parental rights, and it's amazing that we're having a debate about this. And I think parents also recognize that, look, having our kids in school is really, really important for their development, both, you know, academically, socially, emotionally, all of that.
In person.
That's right. And that became a key issue that I think we took for granted. You know, a lot of parents took for granted. And what it has created is, I think, a groundswell. We're seeing it in the creation of a new political action committee. Of course, everything has to get some politics to it.
Well, that's the only way to express the people's will.
That is correct. But what's unique about this in Pennsylvania is we have not seen a broad-based investment in school board races. I mean, frequently, local parties are like beating the bushes trying to find people to run for school board, because it is probably the most thankless job you could have.
No doubt.
The biggest pain in the rear end to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to make a difference, it would require a ton of time and get information that, frankly, many superintendents and business managers don't want inquiring minds to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's incentives to, you know, not let the public really see the inner workings of what's going on in a school district, from finances to curriculum. But with COVID, we've seen a groundswell. A new political action committee was formed called Keep Kids in School PAC. And the sole purpose of that political action committee is to support people running for school boards that are saying, we have to get our kids in school.
Yeah.
Pushing back on this idea that let's just go remote. We'll do everything via Zoom. And so they have this PAC, I think, is going to be involved in one out of every five school district races across Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Directly involved. Now, that's not that's not even counting many school districts that probably have other people running that we don't even know about. And so the objective here is to get people onto school boards that are saying, look, in-person learning is just absolutely critical. And they're running on that, and they seem to be making quite a bit of hay. So here we're recording, you know, before the election results. It will be interesting to see whether this really resonates with people at the, you know, ground level. This PAC has been able to inject about $10,000 into every school board race, which is a significant amount of money for a school board race, which means you'll be able to get that information that we're talking about that is so lacking in these local elections.
Representative self-government is not a spectator sport, that people have to choose to live life with their brains turned on, that they have to engage with the process and exercise their citizenship. Because if you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it for you, and you might not like what they do.
Well, and so after this program, I would encourage all the listeners to get online, find out who is running for your school boards, right? Who's running for township supervisors and all these levels of government. Investigate. You've got time so that you can make an informed vote on Tuesday, November 2nd, which I hope everyone who's a right-thinking American goes out and does.
And again, you pay tribute to the wisdom of our founders. You uphold our American civilization not merely by casting a ballot, but by casting an informed ballot. Know what you believe and why. Do the work. Get the facts so that you can have an accurate understanding of what's at play.
Well, and when you talk about your property taxes, which are a big chunk of the taxes people pay, these are the people making those decisions. So you should be concerned about who is managing the finances of your school district, because when they mismanage them, you end up paying for that.
Yeah.
And so it's important that people become informed and get out and vote for the candidates that support their positions on these issues.
Absolutely. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners. And actually, now we get to introduce, we have a secret weapon. We have a guest star. Matt, do you want to introduce our special guest?
The special guest is my special daughter, in all the good ways. Actually, one of my three daughters, LJ Briette, is in the studio with us. She's a senior homeschool student. But actually, I was sharing this even earlier today, that LJ is like the model of what a school choice student looks like. She's been to private school, public school, cyber school, and homeschool. She's pretty much experienced all the ways, and we're fortunate as a family to be able to make those choices so that it best fits her learning needs. And LJ doesn't mind me sharing this. I mean, she had some major back surgery a year and a half ago. We needed that flexibility. Not every kid can get that. And so having the ability to make school choices was just important for her own health and also for her academics. Here she's a senior in high school. She's basically working on college work right now. Hopes to, I'm kind of breaking all the thunder, but I like to brag on her.
Of course, dads always do.
That's right. Intends to go off to Grove City College. So any Grove City, admissions officers out there, make sure you let her in, because she's banking on it. She's applied for early admission and is looking forward to getting involved in college, and is kind of my political junkie.
Okay.
Of the family. So I've used a lot of time, but I definitely want to tell the story of what got her the bug. So LJ was with me, and David, you'll remember this.
Okay.
LJ came to work with me. It was December 23rd of 2015, which you'll remember is the first year of Tom Wolf's, what we called his pregnant budget, right? Remember, it took
It took 9 months to deliver,
To deliver. There was a deal on the table that included some pension reform as well as a tax increase. Now, we were moderately supportive of the pension reform. We didn't like the tax increase, but, everybody's trying to just get things done. Well, we recognize that if we killed the pension reform, it would sink the tax increase as well. LJ, so this was 6 years ago, so she was 11 at the time, came to the Capitol with me.
What, LJ, why don't you tell the story?
So then, yes,
please.
What happened? So,
well,
yeah.
Thank you, Dad.
Yeah, I'm talking way too much, I know.
Thank you for the introduction, and thank you, David, for having me. It's really great to be here. So at 11 years old, it kind of went over my head what I was doing, but I just knew that I really liked Seth Grove, and I really liked spending time with my dad, and getting to be in this huge building with all these really cool people was really neat to me. I wasn't super aware of what a bill was and what we were really doing, but I knew that I wanted to help. So getting to go around the Capitol and talk to so many legislators and really get to hear from them and tell them why we needed this change, it was a lot for me, but I learned so much from the experience. Seth Grove actually took me onto the floor after the vote.
State Representative Seth Grove from York County. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Seth, let me just frame this up a little bit. Seth said, look, if we get 40 votes, we get 40 Republicans to vote no, we'll kill the tax increase. Well, LJ and Seth started going around, and LJ was our secret weapon there.
We flipped over 60 votes. So getting to sit up in the gallery and watch that screen flip like that, that was what really gave me the bug right then and there. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever done. But then, like I said, getting to go on the floor and getting to see the impact that we made, such a direct impact in such a short amount of time, that's when I got the bug, for sure.
So how has that manifested in your life since then?
Well, since then, I've gotten involved in quite a few youth organizations that are geared towards conservative values. I mean, I started at 11, and then at 12 years old, I got to page for my state representative, Frank Ryan, in the 101st District. Getting to page for the House of Representatives, getting to be back on the floor just after a year of, you know, getting those tax reforms, it was really, really great. So getting to have that experience at 11 years old and then 12, and then getting into high school and getting to start trying to start conservative groups that pushed for my values and represented the students around me, starting a Students for Life in my school district, getting involved in Turning Point USA and Young Americans Foundation, and getting to attend conferences and youth organizations that host speakers. That has been the most influential thing for me. It really geared me towards getting involved.
Yeah. And so I was going to ask, what speakers have you heard along the way, and who impressed you most?
Well, actually, last month I got to hear Ben Shapiro at the Chamber dinner, and that was really, really neat. He actually had a debate with someone on left-leaning, and that was really enlightening. But I've also gotten to hear, I mean, tons of representatives around the state, and getting to hear from people who are really passionate about things like school choice and the pro-life movement. Those have been most impactful. I've gotten to hear Abby Johnson from the pro-life movement.
Yes.
I actually got to meet her about a month ago at the first Pennsylvania March for Life. Those have been two of the most impactful people for me. But I mean, I've gotten to hear from so many wonderful people that really represent the conservative movement as a whole.
That's awesome. So what is it like being a young person today? I remember my own battles, in high school and college back in the Reagan years.
But as Doogie Howser, right?
Yes, yes, yes. So LJ, what's...
I'm sorry, Alex P. Keaton, right?
Yes. LJ, what's it like today?
Well, like my dad said, I've tried all the different types of schools. I've done private, I've done public, I've done charter, I've done homeschool. Public was definitely what presented me with the most obstacles. Being surrounded by a mostly liberal student population, it presented me with a lot of division between friends. In 10th grade, that's when actually the 2020 election happened.
Uh-huh.
And that really divided my school. I lost a lot of friends because everybody knew where I stood. And in the moment, that was really, really hard for me. I was only 15. But losing friends, it really showed me the important things of standing up for what I believe in. So it was a hard environment. But in the end, I walked away with so much more than what I went in with.
That's outstanding. That's outstanding. So what advice would you have for other young people who maybe they're interested in politics and government and all of these important public policy issues? Maybe they're not. Maybe they view it differently. What's your advice?
Use social media for the right reasons. In the moment, you feel really alone and you find these organizations that are geared towards helping you and supporting you. And that's what gave me so much strength was hearing, oh, my word, there are other students around this country that are dealing with the same things and some even worse than what I was going through. So hearing from these organizations that strengthened my arguments and really taught me the apologetics of defending, you know, a conservative view from a youth standpoint. That was what gave me the most strength.
That's awesome. And I, your dad, in the course of bragging about you, mentioned that you were part of City on a Hill, which is a program of the Pennsylvania Family Institute. How did that go for you?
Yes. So this past summer, I got to participate in Pennsylvania Family Institute's annual conference. It's a Christian worldview conference where we get to learn about politics from Christian worldview. It was one of the most enlightening experiences for me. We were there for a week. We got to hear from multiple different speakers throughout. And at the end of the week, we were deemed as representatives, and we were each given two bills, one to support and one to oppose. And then we were also separated into parties, and we had elections. And then we actually got to go to the Pennsylvania State Capitol and perform a mock session on the floor.
Wow.
I was elected Speaker of the House. I was only the second person in the minority party to get to do that. I was the first woman, which was really, really neat.
In 20 years of the program. So
yeah. How about that?
Quite the feat. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I believe I flipped over 15 votes. I know that. So it was great experience.
Well, that's wonderful. And, you know, just hearing your voice and listening to the way that you talk about these things, it's great to have youthful enthusiasm, and new eyes looking at these things, even though they're eternal truths. For young people encountering them for the first time, that it really is, sort of an awakening. And
well, David, I think one of the things that, and look, of course, LJ grew up in our house, so that's going to seep out and into our pores. But yeah, all kids have to own their own beliefs, whether it's their faith or their political values. And I think that LJ has done that herself. And that's what gives me hope for our country, is that I see her and her friends that have become passionate about our country and the values. That's why I'm hopeful for our future. That, there are a lot of reasons that we can be depressed about where our country is going, but I see it in a lot of youth that still embrace the American ideals that that I believe can be carried onward.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Well, LJ, thank you so much for being with us and telling us your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're coming down here to the end of our time. Matt, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for bringing our all-star. where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you do?
Yeah, go to thecommonwealthpartners.com. And LJ is interning at Commonwealth Foundation. You can go to commonwealthfoundation.org.
Outstanding. As ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Matt and LJ and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. In just a few days, voters will go to the polls and decide who will serve in one of the most powerful positions in state government. We won't be electing a governor or even someone who will be tabbed as a legislative leader. We will be electing a justice of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. The Supreme Court seat, along with a seat on the Superior Court and two seats on Commonwealth Court, are on the statewide ballot. The judiciary, a co-equal branch of state government, is often overlooked by voters, as elections to those benches occur in a so-called off-year election, with the races themselves tending to be low-key affairs. Recent events, however, have shown that the state's appellate courts can and do have as profound an impact on our daily lives as does the executive and legislative branches. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, Governor Tom Wolf exercised dictatorial powers, implementing policies that had a devastating impact on businesses and trampled the individual rights of every Pennsylvanian. The Republican-controlled legislature tried valiantly to counter the governor's draconian policies, but virtually every effort ended with a gubernatorial veto. The balance of power lay with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. It wasn't a fair fight. In 2015, a coalition of labor unions and trial lawyers caught the GOP napping and essentially purchased three seats on the high court. The new justices have proven to be left-wing activists and consistently ruled in the governor's favor, thus prolonging the negative impact of the pandemic. Voters ultimately had the final say, approving two constitutional amendments that curtailed the governor's emergency powers, and some semblance of order was finally restored, but the damage had been done. This was not the first time the rogue Supreme Court justices have run roughshod over the state constitution. Although there was no constitutional basis for them to do so, in 2018 they threw out Pennsylvania's congressional district map, hired a left-wing college professor from California to gerrymander new district lines, and imposed a new map by judicial fiat. This resulted in a net pickup of Democratic seats. Again in 2020, the justices put their thumbs on the electoral scale. In a series of rulings, they assisted Democrat Joe Biden by tossing the Green Party's presidential candidate off the ballot. Without the constitutional authority to do so, they extended the period of time for general election ballots to be received and counted. This ensured a Joe Biden win, but destroyed voter confidence in our electoral system. The recent behavior of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has clearly demonstrated two things. First, what they do matters and has significant consequences. Second, despite their carefully constructed veneer of impartiality, courts are as political as the other two branches of government. Pennsylvania's appellate court system consists of three courts: the Supreme Court, the Superior Court, which hears civil and criminal appeals from the County Courts of Common Pleas, and the Commonwealth Court, which hears litigation involving government affairs. Democrats have a 5-2 advantage on the Supreme Court. Superior Court is somewhat evenly divided, and Republicans hold the advantage on the Commonwealth Court. In theory, the political makeup of the various benches should not matter. And on balance, the Superior and Commonwealth Courts tend to stick to the Constitution and the law, which are the metrics upon which judges should rule. But as we have seen, the Supreme Court has frequently tossed the Constitution into the dustbin and appropriated unto itself what are essentially legislative powers. That is why this year's appellate court races matter. Recent campaign expense reports show some $5 million having been spent so far by entities supporting either Republican Kevin Brobson or Democrat Maria McLaughlin. That might sound like a lot of money, but, for example, Attorney General Josh Shapiro already has $10 million in his campaign fund for a gubernatorial race that is a year away. Chances are most voters know little about either Brobson or McLaughlin, not to mention the six candidates vying for the Superior and Commonwealth Court seats. But these races are critically important. Voters should take the days remaining until the ballots are cast on November 2nd to learn more about the court candidates so they can make an informed decision on Election Day. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WIOV-AM in Reading, along with WWBE-FM and WFYY-FM in Selins Grove, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.